It's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This is the week where I declare myself a genius. Now, of course, I declared myself a genius many times before because I am a genius. But I get to declare myself a genius for my Oscar predictions, and I'll talk about, you know, which ones I picked and how they were right just in a little bit. We're also going to be talking about some new movies. 300, Rise of an Empire, the sequel to 300. Big surprise. Mr. Peabody and Sherman, a remake of the old TV show cartoons with Rocky and Bullwinkle. And Haunt, which is a smaller, more independent horror film. There's also going to be some news, some listener feedback, the trailer park, and the DVD roundup. But first, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And finally, if you want to reach me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/kevincarr. First, before we get into the news, and I know we're going to hear Ron Burgundy come up here in a minute, just wanted to remind everybody what a genius I am. Look at what I got right on the Oscars. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress. 6 for 6. I'm a genius. Do not go to Fat Guys at the Movies and look at my Oscar ballot because I blew everything else. I don't do well in the smaller categories. Even though I saw all the short films, I got none of them right. But on this show, I am declaring myself a genius, an Oscar genius.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. We've got some news tonight. First of all, Terry Gilliam has come out and talked about how he would have ended The Watchmen. If you remember that movie from, oh gosh, it was like 7 years ago now. Zack Snyder, of course, who directed 300 and Man of Steel, directed it. It's actually one of the best comic book adaptations I've ever seen. It's a really good movie, Watchmen. If you haven't had a chance to see it, check it out. It's rated R. Don't show it to the kids. One of the things Zack Snyder did is he was almost, I mean, shot for shot, exactly like Alan Moore's original graphic novel. He changed one slight thing at the end, but I think it was a very reasonable change, and it made more sense for a movie. It would have been the way it was in the original comic book. It was going to be a little silly. I'm not going to explain, because if you haven't seen The Watchmen, and it didn't do terribly well at the box office, go see it, because it's a good movie. I don't want to spoil it for you. I'm just saying that Terry Gilliam's ending was terrible. Terry Gilliam was trying to make the movie back in the 80s and the 90s, never came through. And as much as I respect Gilliam as a director, what he was trying to do, I mean, the ending he would have used would have unraveled the entire universe, quite literally, and made it very different and completely changed it from what it was. And that's the problem in Hollywood. Hollywood always has the director trying to put his or her, mostly his, specific spin on something and their own version of it. And even then, when Zack Snyder did Watchmen, he was perfectly adhering to the mythology and the source material. Didn't do so much with Man of Steel. Now, Man of Steel did better, I think, because Superman's a more recognizable name. But I wish he would have done that with Man of Steel. Anyways, the next piece is another piece of superhero news. Scarlett Johansson, good old ScarJo, is pregnant. Interesting, huh? Now, she's in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which comes out in about a month. And it looks good. And there's already talk about doing a Black Widow movie spinoff. This won't happen until after she squirts that kid out. But the big question is, how is it going to affect Avengers 2? Because they're in the middle of it. And it's not just will she start to show. I mean, I don't know when her baby bump's going to be poking its head out. But it's not as much when she shows. You also have to be very careful that you're not putting her in harm's way. And you can't have her doing stunts and, you know, lickety-split karate while she's pregnant. And you don't want her to fall down and miscarry, because that would be awful. And we don't want that to happen. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I think this has yet to play out. So those are the first two news items. A couple more news items we're going to hit in the later segment after we do some box office. But right now, you hear that sound. It is time for the trailer park. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first trailer in the trailer park is one that's a highly anticipated movie by some. Oddly enough, this is not getting the play that I expected it would for such a big movie. It's sort of, at least at this point, flying a bit under the radar. And that is Transformers Age of Extinction.
Look, it's not normal steel.
I don't think it's a truck at all. I think we just found a Transformer.
I'm going to ask you this once. Where is Optimus Prime?
You know, we got a rule about messing with people from Texas.
The age of the Transformers is over.
People who know me, people who've read my reviews, people who've listened to me on the radio, they know that I am not a fan of Michael Bay. I think the guy's an idiot. I think the guy makes beer commercial filmmaking. I don't think he does a very good job doing anything besides painting pretty pictures and doing some awesome action sequences. When they give him characters and they give him story and plot, he has no idea how to handle that. With that said, I actually think that this trailer hints at a plot, which is kind of amazing on its own. And it also hints at a relatively simple plot. Unlike the last two Transformers movies, which were all over the map, and things were happening and then not happening and falling all over each other, this trailer looks like it's Michael Bay at least restrained a little bit and attempting to do a quality film, as opposed to what happened with Transformers 2. Was the perfect example of the four Transformers movies, at least so far. Transformers 2 was the one that was the example of the completely unencumbered, just raw stupidity of a movie. Transformers Age of Extinction, I think it helps. Mark Wahlberg's in the lead role instead of Shia LaBeouf, because, you know, he's not famous anymore. It also has, I don't even know who the girl is who plays, and that the pretty girl that is always sexualized by Michael Bay with the camera is at least his daughter, so she's not going to be ridiculously sexualized, and there's not going to be that annoying fact that dorky old Shia LaBeouf gets the hottest women in this universe. It looks like it's actually a better setup than the other ones, and you know, hey, it only took them four films to actually get the story possibly right. So that opens on June 27th. Oddly enough, I didn't hate the trailer. Kind of looking forward to it. The next trailer I want to hit showed up in the middle of the week, and people just kind of went bonkers over. And it is Annie, which is the remake of the Broadway show. It's a new adaptation of the Broadway show. And it features Quvenzhané Wallace and Jamie Foxx in it.
Get up and out of bed! The city called. They're coming to inspect. You gotta clean this whole place up.
Aren't they supposed to give notice?
Aren't I supposed to be married to George Clooney?
Who's George Clooney?
Exactly, girlfriend.
So what's the hustle?
The more we're seen together, the better it is for my campaign.
I bet if I moved in with you, you'd become president.
So this is what it's like living with a billionaire?
The worst thing in the world you can get is a little taste of something good, because it never lasts. And from then on out, the only thing that you can taste is not that taste.
I have a feeling that Cameron Diaz there was describing her career to a certain degree. Not to really pick on Cameron Diaz. She's not a great actor. She's pretty. She's losing her looks just because she's getting a little older. That happens. That's just aging. She no longer looks like she did when she was in The Mask, for example. But this movie, I'm sorry. Things can change, and you can never judge completely by a trailer. You can anticipate by a trailer, but you can't judge by a trailer. This movie looks terrible. I mean, it really looks awful. And I guess the other question I have is, haven't we as a society gotten past the, let's do a black remake of this? Like something like About Last Night, which they did a couple weeks ago, that came out. That was fine because it had an African-American cast, but it had like this group of people that have worked together before. And it didn't feel like it was forced into the racial thing. But here they've got Annie is African-American. You've got Jamie Foxx, who's playing the version of Daddy Warbucks, African-American. The one white person in it is the bad guy, Miss Hannigan. I mean, can we get past the whole, we need to make this movie for black people or for white people? Let's just make a movie and cast it. It just feels like it's been forced into the African-American cast, unless you're going to do it like The Wiz, which was a completely new concept and completely new music and completely new story. Can't we just cast a movie to cast who's best for it? Anyways, I that's my call for racial equality. I have to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some things that I noticed in the Oscars and 300 Rise of an Empire. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kadeem Sazeel. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that was the wrong card. I was reading off of John Travolta's cue card. This is Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's just roll into the Oscar jokes here. I'm not recapping it. Everybody, if you've seen it, you've seen it. It's a week ago. You know, we all know who won. There really were no surprises, though. The only big surprise, for me at least, was that The Act of Killing didn't win Best Documentary. But it makes sense that 20 Feet from Stardom won, because that's a good documentary, A. And B, 20 Feet from Stardom is about the entertainment industry, and the Oscars and the entertainment industry itself is nothing if not narcissistic. So them giving an award to a movie about people not getting the recognition in their own industry, to them, is more important than, you know, meeting genocide head on in a documentary. I have to point out the whole John Travolta thing. This is him introducing Idina Menzel to sing Let It Go.
Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
What's so amazing about this is not just that he got her name wrong, but he got her name so colossally wrong, it was comical. And I don't know where he was thinking. Was he thinking of Eddie Dazeem, the nerdy guy from those 80s movies? I mean, I don't even know where his brain was. Oh, and also, if you listen to it, he called her the wickedly talented. So obviously, at least the cue cards, he knew what he was saying, and he emphasized it, so he knew that he was kind of in on that joke. I don't know what happened. What's funny, though, is he came out then through his publicist and apologized. And his apology, well, it was a cheesy apology. And what else is he going to say? But he said, I was an idiot, you know, and what would she say? She would say, let it go. And so I'm going to let it go. Because was he going to admit that he was high as a kite? I don't think so. Even though he probably was. I don't know what he had in his system. But if you watch the clip, I mean, he looks like he doesn't even know he's on the planet Earth. That's all I have to say about John Travolta. Let's move on. One more thing I really want to hit, and this is something that's getting a little bit of news. Again, this isn't the hard Oscar talk. This is sort of things I noticed more about the industry, and something I want to point out. The cosmetic surgery that goes on, and a lot of people marginalize it to actresses, and it's not just them. I mean, look at John Travolta. I mean, he doesn't even look like the same person. His skin was, you know, almost plastique, and it was pulled, stretched. So he'd obviously had some work done. I mean, a lot of work done that didn't look good. I mean, he looked like he was possibly not even him, but maybe a robot. Another robot we saw on stage was Kim Novak, who was 81, who looked like Robert Czar from Maniac Cop. And I saw people, you know, defending her on Twitter and Facebook. They go, no, she looks great for 81. I'm like, no, she doesn't. She does not look great for 81. She doesn't look like a normal 81-year-old woman, but she does not look great. She looks weird. And Liza Minnelli's another one with crazy plastic surgery. Goldie Hawn has crazy plastic surgery, but from far away, and when she does her hair right, she hides a lot of the real imperfections. But I'm sure if you got a close-up of her, she'd be hideous. And not hideous in a she's old. Hideous in you need to stop cutting your face. And here's the thing. Cosmetic surgery is like adding salt to a soup. If you have a soup and you're cooking it on the stove, add some salt and it enhances it. It can make it taste better. A little bit of cosmetic surgery can make you look a little bit younger, make you look a little bit better. And then you put more in and it's going to taste okay. And then at a certain point, you're going to be like, this is starting to not work. It's starting to take away from it. Too much salt. And then the way Hollywood and cosmetic surgeons deal with it is they tell you to get more. And so they get more. And if you keep putting salt in a soup to make it taste better, it will suddenly not taste good, then taste terrible, and you can't undo it. Whereas if you just let the soup be the soup, and people, who's telling these people that these weird chin tucks and these plastic looking Botox faces and these duck lips from having injections and collagen, who tells people that they look good? Because they certainly don't. And Kim Novak was a fantastic example of that. Anyways, that's all I really have to say about the Oscars. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to movie reviews. First one up is 300, Rise of an Empire. In this sequel to 300, the Greeks must defend their homeland from the invading Persian navy.
Leonidas and the brave 300 are dead.
Have I not given enough for your dream of a united Greece, Themistocles? A king? husband.
Avenge him.
You will be the God King.
For glory's sake, war!
Now, like everybody else, when I heard that they were going to make a 300 sequel, I just sort of giggled. Because seriously, everyone dies at the end of 300. Everyone dies. There's like one guy and he's half blind. And that is it. So where do they go from there? But it turns out that Frank Miller wrote a book, another graphic novel called Xerxes, which serves as both a prequel that tells the story of Xerxes and how he becomes the God King, sort of how he's imbued with supernatural power. But it also tells sort of like what happens after 300. How does Xerxes react? Where does Xerxes go? Where does he send his army? And what do the Greeks as a whole do to defend themselves? Now, it's not as strong as 300. It's not as good of a story. It's not as tightly written. It's not as perfectly done. However, it's still not bad. It has a difference in location. Whereas 300 all took place kind of right at that hot gates where they were defending the sort of this channel where, so they could successfully defend the entire region from the Persian army with just 300 warriors. A lot of this takes place on the Aegean Sea. And like the other 300 movie, it's all virtual sets, a lot of CGI, a lot of slow motion ramping action. So it does look a lot like 300. Now, 7 years ago, when the first 300 came out, that was all very innovative and new. Ever since then, it's been imitated and just copied over and over and over again. Even this year, we've had Pompeii and The Legend of Hercules, and even I, Frankenstein, to a degree, just copying what Zack Snyder did in 300. And so it's more cliche now, but had they not done it for this 300 movie, it would look weird. It would look weird to not make this have the same color palette and the same design and the same production value that you had in the original 300. It looks cool on the water. It looks cool to give it that naval centric focus. Also on top of it, Eva Green plays the leader of the Persian Navy, and she is fantastic in this movie. Absolutely fantastic. She dives into the role and she just eats it up. She attacks the role with the same veracity that she did Dark Shadows, the role she did in Dark Shadows, only this one it's a better role. Dark Shadows wasn't that strong of a movie. But this one she commits, and she does a great job, and she is a formidable opponent to the main guy, Thermopylae. And he's not that good, though. I mean, he's not bad. He's got the abs, just like I do, and he looks good in the loincloth. But he doesn't have the same charisma that Gerard Butler does. But fortunately, Eva Green does. And that's what makes the movie good. It does have a little bit of that sort of, you know, jelly donut looking blood that's a little bit overdone in this one. But overall, it's still pretty cool. And it has a lot of stuff happening. It's a little bit disjointed and it jumps all over the place, but that's okay. I enjoyed it. And I thought it was a worthy follow-up to 300. Not great, but, wow, this could have been an absolute disaster and it's not. So I'm going to say that 300 Rise of an Empire kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
With that, we got to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Mr. Peabody and Sherman and Haunt.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Open Gangnam Style.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk about another movie that kind of calls to the past in more ways than one. That would be Mr. Peabody and Sherman. It's an adaptation, a modern 3D CGI, big blockbuster, spectacular, of the original Improbable History cartoons that took place in the Rocky and Bullwinkle show back in the late 50s and early 60s. Very rudimentary animation on this. The originals. And they had Rocky and Bullwinkle, Boris and Natasha, and then they had Fractured Fairy Tales, and this was Improbable History. The story, of course, being Mr. Peabody is this genius dog, and he gets his own boy. And what they would do is they would knock around history using the Wayback, W-A-B-A-C. And that was his time machine that took you back into history. And it would always be like odd history. It was weird. Not quite accurate history. I found that on Amazon Prime, you have like the first set of these improbable histories available. And there's like 20 of them or something like that. And there's short little 10-minute cartoons. And one of them like had them going back to Beethoven. And he was composing his Fifth Symphony, and they found him on the corner of Fifth and Main in New York or whatever. So, of course, it was a ridiculous thing because Beethoven didn't exist. You know, he wasn't in New York. You know, it was just being silly, and it always ends with a pun from Mr. Peabody. Here we have the updated big budget, big movie version of it. The plot is the genius dog, Mr. Peabody, adopts a boy named Sherman who uses a time machine to impress a girl. And Mr. Peabody has to step in and repair the damage to the space-time continuum.
She hates me.
Make it work. But don't tell her about the Wayback.
He calls it the Wayback. It's a time machine. Wow.
Sherman, Penny, why are you two dressed like ancient Greeks?
I lost her in ancient Egypt.
And I got engaged to King Tut. Then we ran out of gas.
In ancient Troy.
You used the Wayback.
Yeah, she was into it.
Oh my. You used time travel improperly. We must rewrite history in order to save the universe.
When I first heard about this movie, when I first saw the trailers, it looked terrible. And this is why I still have a little bit of hope for Annie, who she talked about in the earlier segment. It just looked so terrible. It looked like it was just taking this very loosely associated story and making a cute cartoon out of it. Whereas when I finally saw this movie, they do play well to the original story of Mr. Peabody and Sherman. He's sort of this arrogant, pretentious, very well-educated dog, genius level, and he adopts a boy. And they do lay on quite a bit thick the father-son angle. You know, there's the father and son interaction, Mr. Peabody not wanting to say he loves him, not wanting him to be called dad. In the original series, or the original cartoons, that was just because that was a quirk of Mr. Peabody. They add a little more significance to it in this movie, and they add more of a sort of like a, I guess you could call it a MacGuffin, just to get the story going, in the sense that Mr. Peabody sends Sherman to school and Sherman gets bullied, and then he ends up biting a girl because they want to take him away from his dog father because he's biting, he's acting like a dog. And sort of like what propels the story is he's afraid the social worker is going to take Sherman away. And that works, and I guess that's forgivable in the context, because the original Mr. Peabody and Sherman, they were 10-minute cartoons, and they didn't have much of a plot. They were more or less whimsical jokes. And then this one actually has to have a story, so I forgive that. I forgive it turning a bit into Despicable Me when it didn't necessarily need to be. But they still kind of keep the essence of Mr. Peabody. Now they have Ty Burrell doing the voice, and he does a fine job. I just still wish they would have gotten David Hyde Pierce, because that's who I hear when I hear a modern version of Mr. Peabody. I don't know whether they asked David Hyde Pierce or they went straight for Ty Burrell, because Ariel Winter plays the little girl in it who Sherman takes back in time. So I guess they both came from Modern Family. So, you know, maybe there is a little bit of nepotism there, but they all do fine jobs. And once they get going into the time travel, it's fun. I mean, they do what they've done in the past. They have him going and visiting Leonardo da Vinci and interacting with him and doing things that normally you wouldn't expect, and flying around in his flying machine. They go to the Trojan War, they interact with that, and they change history in a very goofy sort of way. Where it just does wrinkle a bit is near the end, where they finally have to say, oh my gosh, we actually have to wrap this up and put a climax to it. And they're like, oh, well, we need to. They have a greater threat show up, and they have this social worker still lurking about. But overall, it's a fun movie. And the reason I think it's worth seeing with your kids is if it just gives a kid a little bit of a interest to learn more about Leonardo da Vinci, or to learn more about the Trojan War, or to learn more about ancient Egypt and who Tutankhamun was, that's a good thing. This movie might spark some interest in real history from kids, and we could use that. That's a good thing. And so even if you're annoyed with cartoons, and even though this isn't the best cartoon or the best movie that's been made, even this year, it's still a worthwhile movie, and it's worth taking your kids to, if for no other reason, to give them a reason to be excited about history and education. So I'm going to say Mr. Peabody and Sherman kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I'm going to be talking about is Haunt. This is from IFC Midnight. It's a smaller release. It's on demand now, and you can find it in limited release. A family moves into a house whose previous owners tragically died. When the son and his new girlfriend try to contact the other side, they unleash something dangerous.
I live in that house. We just moved in.
I've been in that house. It's cursed. Do you want to try something with me? You know what this is?
No.
Talks to the dead. You curious?
Have you been messing about with that box?
Kevin? You don't go opening doors and inviting things through. Do you really want to stop before you figure out how it is?
One of the things that is fascinating about the horror field that not a whole lot of people know if they don't watch a lot of horror movies, the field regenerates and reinvents itself. And sometimes it's with really bad stuff like torture porn and, you know, rape, murder, revenge stories, which we saw with the video nasties in the 70s, or the torture porn in the early 2000s, or found footage now. But you also get some really neat changes and some really neat stuff showing up in the horror field. You had the influx of J-horror back in, you know, about 5, 6, 10 years ago. And now recently you've been seeing a attempt to return to atmospheric horror, with the most obvious ones being The Conjuring and Insidious and Sinister, where it has scary imagery and it has some jump scares, but it's meant to be visceral, creepy, atmospheric, sound-driven horror. It's not just shaky cam. It's not just violence. It's some intense psychological things. And you see even smaller movies like The Woman in Black. And it reminds me a little bit of the movie Haunter, which I covered last year, starring Abigail Breslin, directed by Vincenzo Natali, one of my favorite directors, where they trying to tell decent little ghost stories. And that's what Haunt is. Haunt is ultimately a ghost story that takes place in a haunted house, obviously. And it has some very creepy imagery. It relies a lot on sort of teen angst and interaction between this teenage boy and his would-be girlfriend. But it does it effectively. And yeah, I guess it's geared a little bit more towards a slumber party viewing. Lights out with, you know, teenage kids, girls or boys watching stuff, you know, trying to scare themselves. That's really who it's for. I don't know. I don't think this is necessarily going to be terribly unique and scare veterans of horror movies. But you know what? It's not found footage. It's well directed. It's got some really creepy imagery. It does run over some familiar ground, but it's a fun movie. And it has some interesting twists. It has some good acting. Liana Liberato plays the girl in it. She's a very good actress. And Jackie Weaver, Oscar nominee from last year for The Silver Linings Playbook, she plays in it as well. Ione Skye kind of came out of nowhere to play the mother in this movie. So when it comes to the acting for an independent film, there's a quite a, you know, a step up than you'd expect. So, I mean, if you liked a movie like Mama from last year, you should enjoy Haunt. It's, again, not perfect, but you know what? For the level of release it's getting, that sort of direct-to-video on-demand, very limited release, it's not bad. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the movies this week. We're going to be taking a break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about box office, some more news. We've got a giveaway to do, a Blu-ray giveaway. So stay tuned for that. And of course, the world famous DVD roundup. See you in a couple minutes. Let the sky fall. And here we are in our final segment of Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. The last bit before we send you on your merry way, let's talk about some of the trends that have been happening this week. In particular, let's start with the box office. And was I correct? I said that Nonstop was going to make $20 million. It actually came way above that. It made $28, almost $29 million, which is pretty doggone impressive for this movie that stars an old dude. I mean, it shows that Liam Neeson continues to be able to be a bankable box office name, and he works as an action hero, even in his age. Now, coming in second was Son of God with about $25.5 million, which is really good, especially for a movie that was re-edited from a TV show. One of the things I suggested was, you know, would people go out and see it since they've already seen it on TV? And as you recall from last week, I was not a fan of this movie. I thought it was poorly made. But it you can't discount the Christian audience, the audience that wants to go see this movie and the audience that this movie touches. And, you know, so Son of God, over 25.5 million, $25.6 million. That's really pretty good for a movie that is coming out at the end of February and is not exactly a new story, we'll say. I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know how much legs it's going to have through Easter. Because, you know, here we are, and you got a couple of weeks until Easter. I don't know. I mean, I'll be curious to see what happens with that movie. I'll be curious to see how far it drops. But it should be in for a good run, and it's probably going to have a final tally of 60 million or more. No big, huge news outside of Son of God and Nonstop. The one that did have a little bit of note is Anchorman 2, the R-rated extended cut with 786 new jokes or whatever, came in 14th with $1.4 million, which isn't terrible, especially considering the movie itself is just over 2 months old. And if people saw it, and the movie did very well for itself in the first run. So, yeah, just this probably made it worth the re-edit for a week. They'll make $3-4 million over the course of the week. I am going to say this week, you know, it's weird because I don't know. Some people are saying that 300 was going to win. Some people saying Mr. Peabody. The reason I think Mr. Peabody's actually going to top out 300 is because of the kid audience. It's a family viewing, and it does go and reach a bit into the past. People will remember what it was like to watch Mr. Peabody and Sherman. So I think that that's going to give it a little bit of an edge. The R-rated 300 is going to have a little harder time making the grade. It's not going to come anywhere close to the, what it made, 70 million the first one did. So I think it's going to be a horse race between those two. 300 versus Mr. Peabody. Well, a horse and dog race, I guess you could say. Let's move on to a listener email I got. And this comes from Chad Vader. Again, his name's Chad. I think he's Chad Vader, day shift manager from Knoxville, Tennessee. He writes in, "Now that award season is finally over, I have to wonder, do the Oscars really matter?" They do. The answer is the Oscars do matter. And they matter for a couple reasons. You may have a movie that doesn't make a whole lot of money like Her, but getting an Oscar nomination, it helps build it up, and it will add some box office. It's something you can stick on the DVD or Blu-ray cover box and say, "Hey, Oscar nominated film." It helps to have that. It does. Because if no other reason, it gives a movie more exposure. It makes it a talking point. People hear about it. And even though Her was a relatively large release, not a whole lot of people saw it. But by getting an Oscar nomination, a lot of people, the conversation continued. And now when it comes on Blu-ray and DVD, people are going to say, "Hey, I want to check out what the big deal was." Now for the individuals in it, the performers in particular, hugely matters. Hugely matters. Lupita Nyong'o can write a blank check for whatever she wants. What's she going to do next? Now, I mean, she can make terrible decisions and not do anything with it, like Mira Sorvino did. Or she can do some cool things. I think I want to see Lupita Nyong'o do a action movie. I want to see her be the lead, the Sigourney Weaver of her own Alien series. I want to see her do it because I think she can do it. Jennifer Lawrence has to watch out because Lupita Nyong'o is the new American sweetheart. Everyone loves her and she is adorable and she has such a good attitude. So I'd love to see her do some cool things. Matthew McConaughey is now validated. He can kind of write his own ticket and do whatever he wants to. And, you've got Cate Blanchett's always been respected. And Jared Leto, I think Jared Leto can spin this into something. I mean, you've had people like John Travolta get an Oscar nomination, spin that into a huge $20 million film career. Nicolas Cage got an Oscar win, did the same thing. Anyways, I hope that answers your question, Chad. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about some news to catch up here. Terminator Genesis is starting. That's the fifth Terminator movie. There's been some plot rumors. I'm not going to get into rumors, but it looks like we're going to be seeing some of the original characters from the first film over again, which may or may not be good. You can watch the first 2 minutes of Veronica Mars. If you're a fan of Veronica Mars, we're going to be talking about that next week. But if you're a fan of Veronica Mars and you paid money to the Kickstarter campaign, you can now watch the first 2 minutes of the movie. We will have a link on fatguysofthemovies.com so you can go do that. Or you can just wait until next week and get it on demand or find it in a local theater if it's playing near you. The other thing is there may be a new Matrix trilogy on the horizon. There was a rumor a while back that the Wachowskis were starting work on another Matrix trilogy and some more Matrix movies. And I say, go for it. I love the Matrix. I loved all three movies, even Revolutions. And yes, even the second one, as long and as drawn out as it was. I love those movies. I think that they're visionary. I would love to see what the Wachowskis do 10 years beyond where the technology was from the last one. Bring it on is what I say. Now we hear that sound, that means that we are starting to get ready for the world-famous DVD roundup. Before we actually start rounding up these DVDs, let's talk about a giveaway we have. One of the movies that is in the DVD selection is Ancient Aliens Season 5 Volume 2. This is a History Channel show where they have interviews and they examine ancient beliefs and ancient cultures and how they connect to each other and whether or not aliens influence those cultures. And it's fantastical and at times goofy. And yeah, you've got that guy from the internet memes, George, whatever his name is, Giorgio, who's got the crazy hair where he's like, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens. Yeah, and there are people that are just going to believe everything's alien. I used to listen to the Art Bell show when I was younger, and I had a lot of fun sort of looking into the paranormal and aliens and that sort of thing. So this show kind of took me back a little bit, and it's somewhat reasonable to be on this History Channel because it's about ancient cultures and their history. Anyways, Season 5, Volume 2 of Ancient Aliens, it's available on DVD and Blu-ray, and we have a giveaway for that. We will be giving away a Blu-ray of this series. There's 8 episodes on 2 different discs. And all you need to do to win is to email fatguys@fatguysatthemovies and tell me your favorite alien from movies or television. And I will pick my favorite answer. You can be creative. And the winner gets it. All entries must be received by March 15th, 2014. Contest is open to anyone who is a resident of the continental United States. I don't ship overseas. All right, to talk about the rest of the DVDs, we have The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, which actually came out on Friday of this week. It's kind of a weird splitting the week. They've done this with Hunger Games, and they did this with the Harry Potter movies and Twilight. They tend to make those Thursday or Friday releases. There's also Philomena, which is one of the Oscar-nominated films. Very sweet, touching story starring Judi Dench and Steve Coogan. She's trying to find and track down her long-lost son, who she was forced to give away in an adoption. There's 12 Years a Slave, won Best Picture at the Oscars last weekend. That is now out, available on DVD and Blu-ray. I could have just seen the people from Fox Searchlight furiously putting stickers on all the DVDs to get them out there. Of course, I said Ancient Aliens, Season 5, Volume 2. The Grandmaster, which is the biographical story of the Ip Man, Grandmaster of Kung Fu. And there's also Old Boy, which is the remake by Spike Lee of Chan-Wook Park's original movie. I respect the original. This one's a little bit of a mess, a little bit of a train wreck, but I can't say I hated it. I kind of found certain things enjoyable in it. I think Josh Brolin does a really good job in it, and it has some interesting things to it. The stinker of the week is Girls Gone Wild, Hotter Than My Daughter. Yes, they are still making these movies. Apparently, people are still buying them. I don't know why, when you've got the internet. Anyways, that is it. I have to wrap up. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Need for Speed, Tyler Perry's Single Moms Club. I wonder which one of the unmarried women has AIDS. That's it. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.